Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Magic and the Moon podcast. As always, I am your host, David, and this week we are continuing our series on the Magical Rosary. Last week we talked about the Joyful Mysteries, and this week we are talking about the Sorrowful Mysteries. So if you haven't heard kind of my preamble episode on the Rosary series or the Joyful Mysteries episode, I would encourage you to go listen to both of those before this one to have some context and awareness. But with that being said, we're going to discuss the Sorrowful Mysteries of the Rosary. Again, I think this has applications as both a devotional tool and a tool of manifestation and spellcasting, although I do not apply it to the same kinds of magic that I do with the Joyful Mysteries. So the Joyful Mysteries, which I'm not going to go over because we already did, but in brief, they involve kind of the happier, more pleasant episodes of the lives of Jesus and Mary. And I use those as ways to engage with manifestation and spellcasting to bring about the results we want, from the Annunciation to the Visitation to the Nativity, the Presentation, and the Finding of Jesus. So with the Sorrowful Mysteries, I do not use these for manifestation. I use these for devotional prayers because I do have a devotion to Our Lady of Sorrows. So I think they're very appropriate ways to pray and connect with her as an aspect of Mary. But for magic, I use this for defensive and protective magic, right? We're kind of symbolically turning Our Lady of Sorrows swords to either, you know, strike down enemies or to shield and defend and protect us from things that would seek to do us harm. And also just as a comfort, because that's the beautiful power of the Sorrowful Mother, is that she is with us in our own pain and suffering, comforting us and healing us, guiding us through our grief. So there's a lot we're going to cover. So for the sake of time, we're going to go ahead and get into it. So the Sorrowful Mysteries, meditating on, again, the life of Christ, the life of Mary. And the Sorrowful Mysteries are traditionally prayed on Tuesdays and Fridays. And again, you don't have to do that, but like I mentioned before, in the episode about the Joyful Mysteries, I think that there is magical power that can be tapped into through repetitive prayer. So by doing it, doing the corresponding mysteries on the days that they match with is a way to tap into that power. So the Sorrowful Mysteries focus on the sorrowful events related to the passion and death of Jesus. So again, the mysteries of death are also the mysteries of rebirth. And this is pretty much a universal and most kinds of spirituality and magic. So the first decade of the Sorrowful Mysteries, we will find in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 26, verses 36 to 56. And I am reading from the New English Translation. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to the disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took with him Peter and two sons of Zebedee and became anguished and distressed. Then he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved, even to the point of death. Remain here and stay awake with me." Going a little further, he threw himself down with his face to the ground and he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will." Then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. He said to Peter, "So, couldn't you stay awake with me for an hour? Stay awake and pray that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and prayed, "My Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will must be done." He came again and found them sleeping. They could not keep their eyes open, so leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is approaching, and the Son of Man is betrayed in the hands of the sinners. Get up and let us go. Look, my betrayer is approaching." While he was still sleeping, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs sent by the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him." Immediately, he went up to Jesus and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you were here to do." They came and took hold of Jesus and arrested him. One of those with Jesus grabbed his sword, drew it out, and struck the high priest's slave, cutting off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, "Put your sword back in its place. For all who take hold of the sword will die by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot call on my Father and that he would send more than 12 legions of angels right now? How then will the scriptures that say it must happen this way be fulfilled?" At that moment, Jesus said to the crowd, "Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me like you would an outlaw? Day after day I sat teaching in the temple courts, yet you did not arrest me. But this has happened so that the scriptures of the prophets would be fulfilled." Then all the disciples left him and fled. So, I think the way that this is relatable to the human condition is very obvious. And this is why, despite not being a Christian myself, I have such a deep love and appreciation for the story of the Christ, because you feel the humanity in his voice. When you read those words, you feel the agony and the terror. And I think we can all relate to times in our own lives where we have felt just the complete, total absence of any hope whatsoever. So knowing that there's a spirit accessible to us, that is the person of Jesus, who can comfort us in a similar way, knowing that he's felt that very human pain and terror, is very comforting to me. And I don't believe you have to participate in institutional Christianity or believe in every theological claim of Christianity to have that connection to the person that is Christ. So here, magically, we're stating our need for protection. We're at the lowest of lows, and we're expressing that in this first decade of the Sorrowful Mysteries, and it's saying we need protection. If there is a way for this cup to pass from us, so this is casting a spell here as well, much in the same way that the Annunciation was, setting that expectation but in a different purpose. So here with the Sorrowful Mysteries, we're starting by saying we feel terrible. We need relief. We need assistance. We need protection and strength. And if there's any way that we don't have to go through this horrible thing, then let it not happen to us. But if it has to happen to us for our growth, then help me get through it. And that's the application of the suffering of Jesus in the garden. The second decade of the Sorrowful Mysteries is when Jesus is scourged and whipped at the pillar. So here we go to the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 27, verse 26. And again, I'm reading from the New English Translation. "Then he released Barabbas for them. But after he had flogged Jesus, he handed him over to be crucified." It's short, it's brief, but it is deep. Catholic theology teaches that Mary was completely united to her son in all of his joys and sorrows, and those are the mysteries of the Mater Dolorosa, the Sorrowful Mother. But if you remember from when we discussed the joyful mysteries of the Rosary, that we are all mothers of God, this is true for us as well. So this is our pain, and it's also the pain of others. Because here in the Sorrowful Mysteries of the Rosary, we see a mirror of ourselves. And I think that's true for all of the mysteries, but in this particular, we are the one that is being scourged, and we are also the one that is doing the scourging. This is the in-between place of a very universal human experience, because we have all been on the receiving end of being hurt and wounded and caused pain by others. We have also been all on the giving end of being the one that has caused pain to other people. We are the broken back of Christ, and we are the whip that strikes him. So by reconciling with pain that is our own, and pain that is inflicted on others through our own doing sometimes, we kind of unite ourselves with divinity, with this story, and we unite ourselves with our fellow humans, because there's no other way that's better to cultivate empathy and compassion for suffering of other people, that's better than empathizing with your own pain and taking accountability for the way that you contribute to the pain of others, and sometimes the pain of ourselves as well. So in the beginning of the spell was Jesus suffering in the garden. That's when we're saying we need help, protect us, shield us. And then here in the scourging of Jesus at the pillar, we have the continuation of that, because they expand on each other throughout the decades. So now we have, I need protection, I need safety, even though I have not always been safe. And the best way to protect yourself from being harmed by others is minimizing your harm done to others. Accountability is its own kind of protection. The third decade of the Sorrowful Mysteries is Jesus being crowned with thorns. So here again, we return to the Gospel of Matthew chapter 27, beginning in verse 27. New English translation as well. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the governor's residence and gathered the whole cohort around him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe around him. And after braiding a crown of thorns, they put it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand, and kneeling down before him, they mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews!" They spat on him and took his staff and struck him repeatedly about the head. When they had mocked him, they stripped him of the robe and put his own clothes back on him, and they led him away to crucify him. There's a saying that exists in some forms of ceremonial magic that I think kind of parallels the message of the crowning of Jesus with thorns. And it says, "Art thou willing to suffer to learn?" And again, this is a continuation upon the decades that preceded this, right? Because there is the suffering in the garden where we're saying, I need help. I feel terrible. If this can be taken from me, take it. And if not, get me through it. And then in the scourging at the pillar, we're reckoning with our own suffering and the ways that we contribute to the suffering of ourselves and others as a way to reduce harm on ourselves practically and magically. And now, with the crowning of thorns, it's our response to being willing to suffer to learn. Because there are some times we can't be spared the pain. There are some times that we can't avoid the unpleasantness that may be coming towards us, but we can bear it with grace, and we can acknowledge that there's a lesson to be learned even in the midst of that suffering. And even though they crowned Jesus in a mocking way, the imagery of royalty was still there. He was still the king, even if they didn't take that seriously. And again, I'm not saying you have to believe these spiritual claims made in the Bible. I don't myself, but the symbolism behind it is still relevant, right? So it's showing that we are still people of inherent worth and dignity, even when we are suffering, that even when we are downtrodden and outcast and hurt so badly by other people, regardless of what abuse we may have endured, that we are still good and made in the image of divinity, however we see it, that we are so worthy of goodness and happiness and worth and respect. Okay, moving on. The fourth decade of the Sorrowful Mysteries is Jesus carrying his cross to Calvary. And this is the Gospel of Matthew, the 27th chapter, beginning in verse 32. As they were going out, they found a man from Cyrene named Simon, whom they forced to carry his cross. Again, this is short. This is very simple. But this is a continuation of the human journey, physically and spiritually, through times of suffering. When there are sorrows that cannot be avoided, how we live through them matters, because that darkness of the sorrows will refine us into better versions of ourselves. And that's not me saying that you deserve that bad thing that happened to you, because that's certainly not true. And I am a survivor of abuse myself, so I'm certainly not making that claim. But this is saying that despite our best efforts, Sometimes bad things happen to us through no fault of our own. And it doesn't justify what was done to us, doesn't excuse poor treatment that we may have received, but regardless of how it came about, we now have a decision to stay a victim forever or to allow our suffering to inspire us to have a life that is better than what we had before. So this is a powerful point, which in a way, I guess, can be kind of applied to manifestation, because in magic, right, we've been through the journey, a cycle, if you will, in the sorrowful mysteries, just like we were in the joyful mysteries, because now we're saying, okay, here we are. We've turned the swords through the heart of Mary against our enemies. We've turned them against what would seek to harm us, and the harm is reduced or it's mitigated altogether, because here we're saying we got through it. It's done. We were spared perhaps the situation. And then the following decade of the crucifixion would then be the death of whatever would have done us harm but was not able to. But if it was a harm that could not be avoided, then we have chosen to rise above it and become better, using it to transform our lives rather than destroy us. Okay. The fifth decade of the Sorrowful Mysteries is the crucifixion, which again, Matthew chapter 27 and beginning in verse 33. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of the skull, and offered Jesus wine mixed with gall to drink. But after tasting it, he would not drink it. When they had crucified him, they divided his clothes by throwing dice. Then they sat down and kept guard over him there. Above his head, they put the charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then two outlaws were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by defamed him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who cannot destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are God's son, come down from the cross." In the same way, even the chief priests, together with the experts in the law and elders, were mocking him, saying, "He saved others, but he cannot save himself. He is the King of Israel. If he comes down now from the cross, we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God, if he wants to, deliver him now, because he said, 'I am God's son.'" The robbers who were crucified with him also spoke abusively to him. Now from noon until 3, darkness came all over the land. At about 3 o'clock, Jesus shouted with a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani?" That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of the bystanders heard it, they said, "This man is calling for Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put a stick, and gave it to him to drink. But the rest said, "Leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah will come to save him." Then Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and gave up his spirit. Just then, the temple curtain was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, and rocks were split apart, and tombs were opened, and the bodies of many saints who had died were raised. They came out of the tombs after his resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. Now when the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and what took place, they were extremely terrified and said, "Truly, this was God's son." Many women who had followed Jesus from Galilee and given him support were also there, watching from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and the mothers of the sons of Zebedee. So this is the completion of the journey. Right? So in the context of protective magic, this is the putting to death symbolically of the thing that we were shielded from. An enemy, the effects of baneful magic, perhaps, a negative outcome, right? Those things were symbolically, you know, crucified in the sense that we avoided them. But sometimes we die in a symbolic way. Sometimes we come to the end of ourselves. We come to an end of a certain part of our life, and we have to become something else after. So here we are the crucified Jesus, and we're also Mary in a way that shows that love lives on. And the spirit lives on after death. And we see that in a literal way later with the resurrection, which we'll discuss in a different episode. But in a symbolic way, it's here now that we can never truly be destroyed. We can only become different versions of ourselves, because even in death, our memory lives on in the people that loved us. And we see this here with Jesus, because at the foot of the cross was Mary and Mary Magdalene, who some traditions say was the wife of Jesus. It's the beloved disciple, St. John, who also may have been a lover of Jesus. It's his mother who certainly loved him. So it's showing us in a practical way as well that even in the most horrible times of our suffering, we have people that love us and surround us anyways. Whether that's people that we know personally, whether it's others that wish us well from afar, whether that's family of blood or choice, and maybe if you're totally alone, you have spirits, if nothing else. So it's showing that we're never abandoned, we're never alone, despite how we feel. And there's no shame in that. And we see that in the story of Jesus as well, because even Jesus is saying, "Why have you left me, God?" Like, that's deep. So in the journey of the sorrowful mysteries, we have the beginning of it and the agony in the garden, where we're saying this is something so horrible. If it can be, if I can avoid it entirely, then I want to. But if I can't, then get me through it. We have the scourging. We have the role that we play in the suffering of ourselves and others, and how we must reconcile with that in order to truly heal and have peace and safety. We, in the story of the crowning with thorns, show that there is still dignity and worth and value and love that we have even in the midst of our suffering. In the carrying of the cross to Calvary, it's showing us the importance of how we behave and how we exist and how we treat others, even if we are struggling. And in the crucifixion, we see that we can put to death old and unhelpful versions of ourselves, as well as things that would seek to come against us. And these are the mysteries. These are the powerful magics of the sorrowful mysteries of the Rosary. And I will see you all next week.